This is the Michael K. Show podcast.
I'm joyful and fun.
Listen live weekday afternoon starting at 2.
That's cool, man!
On 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.
Michael K. is on the radio today, and he ain't afraid to say what he's thinking. Is on the radio today. Turn it up, it's time to get on with the show. On 98.7 ESPN Radio.
Hey, this is Greg Buttle, and you're listening to The Michael K. Show on 98.7 ESPN. That's right. It used to be The Buttle Show, but now it's The K. Show.
My man, Butts. Happy Memorial Day, everyone. Bob Wischusen with you for the next couple of hours as we are filling in on The Michael K. Show here on 98.7 ESPN. I'll take the first 2 hours. Dan Grasso will take the next three as Michael right now is busy calling another Yankee, at least to this point, shutout in the Bronx. They are losing 2-0 through four innings, or through three and a half innings, to the Tampa Bay Rays. That's certainly something we could talk about. For me today, 4 hours wasn't enough. I did KJZ for 4 hours this morning, and I just didn't get enough off my chest. So I get 2 more hours, yes, on local radio. And see, that's the thing. I wanted to do this. I wanted to have a couple of hours of local. Because when you host the national shows, look, the national shows are a blast. I worked with Bart all this past week. Filled in on KJZ this morning. I've worked Greeny's show. But when you're doing a national show, you're acutely aware that you're not just on in New York. New York's the number one market. It's the most important market. Our teams will always be a priority to be talked about. But when you know you're on in L.A., got to talk Lakers and Clippers. When you know you're on in Dallas, got to talk about the Clippers and the Mavs. Ultimately, do I really get, you know, worked up about who wins the Clippers-Mavs series? No. It's interesting. But do I get worked up over who wins Knicks-Hawks? Yes. And that's where I grew up. This is where I'm from. So, I mean, you're the people that I want to talk to. I want to talk about New York. And so having a couple of hours that I know I can talk about New York sports is a lot of fun. And, you know, I'm looking forward to the next couple of hours with you on the telephones as well. At 800-919-ESPN, 800-919-3776. And like I said, I care about who wins Knicks-Hawks. I care about who wins Nets and Celtics. I care about Kyrie Irving having a water bottle thrown at his head. I care about a Knicks fan spitting on Trae Young. That affects us. That's our reputation. These are the players that play for the teams in our town. So these are the things I want to talk about. I'm certainly going to kick it off with Knicks, but I'll have some thoughts about Kyrie and the Nets coming up as well. And look, the Knicks backs up against the wall. Now we are officially in must-win territory, down by 3-1. But to me, what this series in particular has driven home, not just about the Knicks, but about the NBA as a whole, and about how the Knicks have to look at this roster going forward, is this league is driven by stars. Okay, there are definitely other things that go into winning or losing a series. Right, Kawhi Leonard, he played like an absolute stud in game two of Mavericks and Clippers. He scored 30 points in the first half, and the Clippers still lost the game. And why did they lose the game? Because they were dreadful on defense. As a group, the supporting cast gave Kawhi and Paul George nothing. All right, so there are instances where a star can play like a star, and the team can still lose. But there's no way a team's ever winning unless the jumping-off point is the star plays like a star. And to me, that has been, more than anything, what we've seen in this series. The Knicks have a player that all during the regular season, I'm not sure we knew he was a star. He certainly put up the numbers that a star puts up. Right? Julius Randle performed in the regular season the way a star performs. His production was that of a star. You know, when you have the Heisman Trophy ceremony, you usually know there's only one or two guys that have a legitimate chance to win it, but there's two or three other guys that at least deserve to be in the room, right? They get invited to the ceremony, even though they have no chance to win the award. Was Julius Randle going to be the MVP this year? No. That was going to go to Jokic. That was going to go to maybe Giannis. You know, it was going to go to a player like that. So you knew Julius Randle wasn't going to be the MVP. But did Julius Randle perform well enough this year to at least warrant being in the room? Yeah. To get a couple of votes? Maybe not first place votes, but appear on some ballots? Get some recognition? You know, a guy that a few people out there at least acknowledge, yeah, this guy's at least on the radar screen to win an MVP. That's the way he performed during the regular season. That star power has to carry over in spades to the postseason. And so, have the Knicks shot the ball well from three in this series? No. That was one of their biggest, you know, their biggest advantages during the season was they are extraordinarily good and were very efficient shooting the three and helping Julius Randle out in that way. Have they done that? No. Have they defended well? We'll get to that in a second, because that kind of plays into the other star in this series. No, they have not defended well in this series. But there's no bigger reason why the Knicks had the season that they had, why they basically doubled what everyone thought their win-loss total was going to be. Their over-under at most Vegas sports books the start of the year was like 20-21. They won 41 games. Right? They doubled what we thought they were going to be. There's no bigger singular reason than Julius Randle that that happened. And there's no bigger singular reason why they're down 3-1 in this series, why they've played four games, and they've only, because of Derrick Rose and, you know, some timely defense, able to scratch out one win, than the fact that Julius Randle, at least in this series, has not performed like he did in the regular season. He just hasn't. And this morning I was on, did KJZ, as I said, with Dan Graziano, and we had on Seth Greenberg, and he was talking about what Julius Randle has been up against in this series. You know, he's been up against at least two, sometimes two and a half defenders, that everything has been funneled towards him. And the guys that he has kicked the ball to when he's made decisions to not shoot, they have not been there to bail him out, to support him. And that's true. The supporting cast hasn't been any better than Julius Randle. Having said that, though, you don't think that every team that plays against LeBron James, against Giannis, against now Chris Paul, against the guys that are performing like stars in their respective series, you don't think they're funneling their defense towards those guys? Are those guys still producing? Yes. You know why? Because they're legitimate stars. They have proven that their regular season numbers translate to the postseason. That in the regular season, they're establishing a baseline that their team knows they can count on in the postseason. And until Julius Randle does that, and now he's got one more chance to do it, it's kind of excuses. Yeah, I mean, Julius Randle has now become the guy that the Hawks, quote-unquote, are saying, no matter what, we're not going to let that guy beat us. Think about it from the other side. The Knicks have a guy during the season that performed all season long like a star. And we were wondering, was he going to be that kind of player in this series? Because there's another guy on the other side that performed all season like a star. And Hawks fans were probably wondering, was Trae Young going to perform like a star in this series? And the Knicks, the number one defensive team arguably in the league, certainly the best overall statistical defense in, you know, the Eastern Conference for a good portion of the year. What were they going to do with Trae Young? Funnel their defense towards Trae Young. Try and take Trae Young out of what he likes. Try and dictate where he goes on the floor. Try and make sure Trae Young doesn't beat them. And what's happened? No matter what the Knicks have thrown at Trae Young, no matter who's guarded him, no matter how many guys have guarded him at a time, no matter what strategy they've used, Trae Young is accounting for 50 points a game in this series. If you add up points created, he's created like 205 points in four games between what he scores and what his assists produce. Trae Young goes wherever he wants to go, whenever he wants to go there, and when he gets there, does whatever he wants to do. If he wants to get in the paint, he gets in the paint. If he wants to shoot the floater, he shoots the floater. If he wants to pull up from 30 feet, he does that. If he wants to get in the middle and penetrate and kick it out to the shooters, he does that. He plays like a star. Both teams have a guy you thought may be a star and that you had to know you had to be able to count on in this series. One team has been able to count on their guy. The other team to this point hasn't. And that's more than any other reason why we are where we are. Now, has R.J. Barrett held up his end? For the most part, no. I mean, that's another guy that when you're third pick in the draft, your team is hoping that you are going to also produce, maybe not like the top guy, maybe not like Batman, but you're going to be Robin. And he hasn't been that. So, we can talk about all the different X's and O's, the Garden crowd, how the Knicks have not responded on the road, the Atlanta crowd, coaching. You know, the Knicks haven't shot the three well. The Hawks have gotten tremendous production, certainly in the last couple of games at home, from their complimentary guys. There's a dozen different elements of this series that we can talk about. But if you boil it down to its essence, really like the top of the pyramid, what's the number one thing? What's the number one reason why we are where we are? Why the Knicks have one more chance to save their season and try and get this thing back to Atlanta and get themselves into, hey, if we can win one game on the road, maybe we're in a game seven. You can't win game seven until you win game five, right? So they now are in, you know, the elimination game three times in a row. Why are we there? One team's got a star that hasn't played like it. The other team has a star that has. That's it. And you wonder, going forward, if this makes the Knicks reevaluate at least a little bit how they view Julius Randle, how they view R.J. Barrett, and how they view how they have to build their team. Because even if they came back and won this series, at least something in this series has exposed what you were worried about when you started to say, is this season from Julius Randle real? Can he actually throw a franchise on his back and carry the load when we get into a tough spot in the postseason? And unfortunately, to this point, the answer has been no. Now, should that take away from what this season has been? In my opinion, it still shouldn't. I mean, we're micromanaging this series. If I would have told you at the start of the year you were going to be a playoff team, a 4-5 playoff team, the 4 in a 4-5 playoff series where you've got home court, after most people predicted and even the most diehard Knicks fans really didn't dispute, you thought they were probably a low to mid-20s win team in a 72-game season, you would have taken that and run. But what do they say? You know, pressure is a privilege, right? Like, you earn the right to have some pressure. You play the way they played during the regular season. It's fun to have some pressure. It's fun to have some ramifications, you know, on a playoff series and, you know, to be playing consequential games at the end of the year. Hey, look, I call play-by-play for the Jets. I would kill for the Jets to have some December and early January games that had real pressure, right? That had real ramifications, that really meant something, that were consequential, where playoff spots were hanging in the balance. That's a great thing. That says a lot about the job Tom Thibodeau did this year and about what the future of the Knicks can be. The Knicks' goal to me at the start of the year was to be the Nets, to prove to the world that the culture had changed, that this was now a place where if I'm the next KD-Kyrie combination, I'm sitting there looking at the Knicks going, hey, that's a spot. Like, there's a reason Zion, with a twinkle in his eye, said I want to go play at the Garden someday. Because the Garden, when you heard it, when it was packed again, when it was a legit playoff atmosphere and Trae Young was there and we had a villain in town for the first time in about 25 years that we actually cared about, what did it sound like? It was awesome. The Knicks created that this year. That 41 season made that atmosphere happen. Trae Young isn't a villain probably anywhere, if not for the Garden being the Garden again and creating the atmosphere where they make a villain and they make a storyline and the crowd impacts it. And it sounds like what it sounded like. The Garden has a particular sound to it, and it's been a long time since we've heard it. So, big picture, this is, no matter what happens in this series, moving forward for the franchise, this is a very successful Knicks season. Big picture. That's macro. The micro view, Julius Randle's not playing like a star. Trae Young is. And that's why we got one more chance to find out if Julius Randle can rise up and be, what to the Knicks, what Trae Young has been to the Hawks. And like I said with Seth Greenberg this morning, when he was talking about how all the defense of the Hawks is rolling towards Julius Randle. Okay, fine. Yeah, I mean, that's what it's supposed to be. The guy produced during the season like a legitimate star player. Now, you're the opposing coach. You're Nate McMillan. Who are you going to guard? Who are you going to make sure doesn't beat you? The legit stars, they still beat you. They beat you anyway. Like Bill Parcells had that old line, don't tell me about the pain, just show me the baby. As crude as that line is. Well, that is a sports, it is a production business. You send one at me, you send two at me, you send three at me. I'm the star player that's going to throw this team on my back, I'm beating that defense regardless. The supporting cast hasn't helped out Julius Randle, but Julius Randle, unfortunately, so far in this series, has not held up his own, has not lived up to most improved player in the NBA, has not lived up to what his regular season star potential looked like. And that's the biggest singular reason why we are where we are. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Bob Wischusen in for the guys on the Michael Kay Show. We've got some open lines if you want to give us a buzz. We'll get to the phones here, and then I've got some thoughts on the Nets or the Celtics and what the Nets can be and how many people in New York. It's so funny hosting the national shows and how many people around the country want to talk about the Nets and how few people in New York seem to want to talk about them. Right? I mean, they are a national story. They're not so much a New York story. Let's get to Adam, who is in D.C. and joins us first here. Bob Wischusen's filling in for the guys on the Michael Kay Show on 98.7. Hey, Adam.
Yeah, thanks for having me on. Number one, I just thought of saying, for all the reasons you stated, as a Knicks fan, I just cannot be too angry. I mean, Tim Thibodeau took this team of cast-offs and journeymen like Nerlens Noel and Reggie Bullock and, you know, Alec Burke and, you know, all the rest of the guys, and he did a mad scientist experiment and got us a 4 seed, so I can't be too mad. But I'm just looking at the numbers right now for Julius Randle. I mean, you know, 20 of 73 from the field, that's 27%, 15 assists to 17 turnovers, so it just tells me that A, he's not reading the defense correctly, he's just throwing to the wrong guy that's not open, and B, he's taking a lot of tough shots that is just not good compared to shots he took in the regular season, shooting 45%, but just a big takeaway, like I said, this team, they just played their tails off. You know, it's hard to be mad at them, but the Hawks are just more talented. But I just want to run something by you, speaking about, you know, for the future, for next season, as far as getting more playmakers, I wanted to just see if, you know, what you think about Lonzo Ball, perhaps. I mean, he's 23 years old. He's a bona fide point guard starter. Still has some room to grow. You don't know he's going to be in this league yet, and we definitely need playmakers badly. So,
yeah, I mean, I could see a pass first. Adam, thanks for the call. A pass first point guard definitely seems to be something that they need. As great as Derrick Rose has been, as much of a revelation as he's been, I don't know past next year that you feel like you can count on Derrick Rose. I don't even know if next year you do feel like you can count on him, right? I mean, do we all believe that Derrick Rose is going from a durability standpoint to be there long-term? No. It's kind of seems like, and that's a little bit of what makes this year a cautionary tale for the Knicks, that, you know, you got an aging second act point guard here that's probably been the best player for them in the postseason that you know you can't count on, that the lottery picks that are on this team, you know, R.J. Barrett's kind of disappeared. Obi Toppin is still a part-time player. I mean, until he learns to shoot the ball consistently, he's Kenny Skywalker. You know, he's a guy that can go win the dunk contest, but when push comes to shove, he's not going to be on the floor when you need him on the floor, you know, carrying your team. Emmanuel Quickley had wonderful moments this season. He's been largely non-impactful in this series. And, you know, a guy like Kevin Knox is buried on the bench. So the youth of this team right now is not that, that's not what's giving you hope that they might be able to pull something out in Game 5. It's still Julius Randle and Derrick Rose, probably more so than any other single player. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. We'll squeeze in Spike in Jersey. He joins us next on 98.7. Hey, Spike.
Hey, thanks for getting me on. I'm in St. Petersburg, Florida, but that's okay. I've relocated. I'm looking at a party next door to me. It looks like there was shoes and contingents here. Everybody has 5 kids.
In St. Petersburg?
Slide. Yeah, yeah.
I'm good, jealous.
Good. Okay, real quick. The Knicks found their point guard yesterday. I told Anthony on the pickup. They found him. Trouble is he's on the other team. Trae Young. He gets in the point more than Benjamin Moore. Into the paint, rather. He's amazing. That's what the Knicks need. That's it. A guy that can get in the paint, create, pretty good shooter. He hides like, I know you know basketball inside out. And what you said to me when you answered my tweet, when you said listening to you being PJ, I get the same feeling when I listen to you. And a couple of others. I just love guys with basketball passion and knowledge. And I could appreciate how you felt listening to those guys. Now, you're not that old, but those guys, man, that's muscleless radio.
Yep.
So here's what I saw. I saw a more talented team, a better coach team, Thibodeau squeezes everything out during the season. Nate McMillan was a 333 coach going into the playoffs, but he had the talent and he had the point guard. You need a point guard that can get in, distribute the ball. I don't care if Trae Young hides on defense. Iverson was an MVP and he loved defense. And so did, I forget the other guy, it was another guy. You know, they have other players to do that. They protect them. And the team had a better strategy. And Julius Randle, I'm disappointed in him, but he should have been pulled when they were down by four.
Yeah, he hasn't. I mean, he's missed shots in this series that have also been wide. We make it sound like every shot that Julius Randle has taken in this series has been contested. Not the case, right? He has been off from the start of this series.
I feel bad for
he
him.
Has missed shots that have been wide open in addition to missing contested shots. Thanks for the call, Spike. I appreciate it. Look, I agree. A Trae Young type, a Lonzo Ball type, you know, I mean, you're going to hear, you know, the next superstar that's going to try and force his way out of his current situation, whether it's Donovan Mitchell being upset in Utah or maybe Damian Lillard finally decides, you know what, I think I've given my all to the city of Portland. I think I'm owed another opportunity somewhere else. And whose buddy will Lillard be that will join him in New York? And can those guys push their way here? Right? I mean, that's what you're going to hear now. You're going to hear about the Knicks being the destination for the next couple of superstars that want to buddy up when they get to be free agents or try and push their way out of their current situation like James Harden did and get out and dictate where they can go. And, you know, there's not an accident that Harden ended up where he ended up. With those two guys, because those guys want to win a championship. And that's what this league has become. A league of go find a buddy, if not two, and go to a place where you think the structure is in place, the supporting cast is in place, and you can build on that structure and that supporting cast and win. The Knicks and the Garden itself have been chaos for the better part of the last 15 to 20 years. Now it doesn't seem that way. Now it seems like Tom Thibodeau has established that baseline, right? That structure. The culture that the Nets built that convinced those stars to come play for them. That's a good thing. That means this year largely has been a success. Doesn't take the sting away from how bad this series has been, though.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
Keith is down in Florida. He's been patient. He joins us next here on 98.7. Hey, Keith.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Julius Randle, going forward, I guess the question is this. Is he really a legitimate number one build-a-team-around player?
No.
He's not. So,
no, he's not.
I think we've learned that we kind of fell falsely into that narrative during this great end stretch of the regular season. So now, if you're saying that he's not, I'm neither here nor there. I'd like to hear your expertise. Then we need to go out and get something that's going to complement him.
But you always knew that, didn't you? Like, didn't you always? I mean, look, as great a season as Julius Randle had this season, I don't know if I heard anyone at some point say he's the nucleus, he's Kawhi, he's KD, he's now gotten to that level, and we have to build around him. I think the conversation was more, how many of those guys do we need? Well, the Nets ended up getting three of them. Could you get one? Could you bring Damian Lillard here, put him with Julius Randle, and then they are the buddies to try and win a championship? Or do you need two of those guys, and Julius Randle's like the third wheel? You know, I think the debate is somewhere in there. I don't think anybody ever for one moment thought Julius Randle is, you know, the end-all, be-all stud player. He's now established himself as a Giannis or as a LeBron or as a Kawhi, and we got to build a team around him. But I do think the debate hovers around, how many of those guys do you need? Like, could Julius Randle be Robin to somebody's Batman, or does he have to be the number three guy? And then he'd really have to sacrifice if that were the case.
Do you think that's going to hurt team chemistry with him? I mean, you know, all of a sudden he's a player, comeback player of the year, and then I got you to the playoffs, and now all of a sudden he's got to check himself. Maybe, I don't know if he is very egotistical or not, but he's got to say to himself, okay, I've got to accept the fact that I'm maybe going to be the number two or the number three guy here.
Well, I guess I would ask him a couple of questions then. Like, if you were Julius Randle, I would sit you down and say, all right, how well did you play this season? Right? Could you have played any better, really, than you did this season? And the answer would probably be no. I mean, I played great this season. Okay, how far did that get us? We were a four seed. We could potentially bow out of the first round of the playoffs to a five seed in five games. So let's be honest about you were great. You established a foundation. But how much does actually winning mean to you? How much does a championship mean to you? And then how much are you willing to sacrifice to get it? One guy that has sacrificed a ton. It doesn't seem like it because they haven't played together that much. But if you look at the few games that the Nets have been intact, I have been extraordinarily impressed. I have eaten my words, and I have become a believer in James Harden. When he was in Houston, I thought the culture of that team was James Harden pound the ball for 20 seconds into the deck, watch the shot clock wind all the way down, fire up a three or hang somebody on his team out to dry, play no defense, shoot massive number of shots, win an MVP based on your stats. But at the end of the season, you're not winning a championship because he was part of what I thought was like a lousy, defense-free, somewhat selfish shooting culture in Houston. And when the Nets went and got him, I was like, oh, man. I mean, you got KD and Kyrie. Now you're going to bring the number one volume shooting point guard in the NBA in here? How is that going to work? It's worked. James Harden has absolutely taken like an offensive backseat to those guys. He doesn't force anything. I've been unbelievably impressed by how much I feel like he has sacrificed to make sure that that works. Right? He's not out there all the time looking to score. When he's out there with Kyrie and KD, he is absolutely not looking to be the first option offensively. It's there for him. He's going to get 20 points just because he's that great. 20 points going to fall in James Harden's lap. There are times where he's compelled, if he's got a matchup in front of him, to take somebody to the basket, or if he's got an open three to shoot it. I mean, he's that good. But this has been much more about him being a pass-first, rack up the assists, control the tempo, set other guys up, point guard. And in a way, Kyrie Irving, I think, is sacrificed too. He's kind of given the ball to James Harden. And he said, all right, I'll become a scorer. I don't have to handle it all the time. Those guys, I do think, have made up their minds collectively. They're going to sacrifice some of their stardom because they want to win a championship together. And I think they're on their way to doing it. What does it mean to Julius Randle to win a championship? That'll be the question he has to ask himself. When they build a team, especially if there are other star players that want to come play here, and I have a really hard time believing that Julius Randle is going to say to management, no, you know what, don't bring Damian Lillard here. He's going to take away some of my points. You know, or don't bring, you know, Donovan Mitchell here. He's going to take away my shots. I just don't believe that. I think Julius Randle is someone that will sacrifice if he knows that there are guys that can now come and join them that are legit on the, you know, the kind of the top of the totem pole. Those guys can come and help him get to the point where the Garden sounds like it did all the time on Sunday night, and then they can win a championship. I'd like to believe that that would be where his priorities would be. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN. Squeeze in Richard in Manhattan before the top of the hour here on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Richard.
Hi, Bob. Bob, as far as throwing items out at ball players on the court, first of all, there are two things you can do. First, you can inhibit the sales of alcohol, maybe after the first quarter, something like that.
That's not fair. Like, I was going to talk about this top of the next hour. You can bring it up now. But, like, you know what? When I go to a game, I like having a couple of beers. And I know I can have a couple of beers and laugh with my buddies and cheer and watch the game without feeling I have to throw a full bottle of water at someone. Like, I can handle two beers. So why should I not be able to drink a beer because some idiot can't handle it.
The other way you can do it, this is what you can do. You make it a snitch reward. Anyone who points points out anyone that throws something at a ball player. They get tickets to the next home game, they tickets to playoff games. They get reimbursed. There has to be an incentive. And let people snitch, oh, he did it, he did it. That's the guy that did it, you know? And let the guards come up and just, that's it. That will, you know. And if a few people do it, let two or three people get involved in it.
Well, what I'm encouraged by is each of the incidents that we've heard about this week, they've caught the person. They didn't need a snitch reward, and they don't need to stop selling alcohol. Like the guy that spit on Trae Young, identified him, gone from the garden.
Good.
The guy that threw the water bottle, arrested.
Good.
The people that you know were yelling racist things at Ja Morant's family in Utah, all banned from the building, you know, kicked out.
Wow.
So, like, I
can
think we're now getting to the point because every single person out there has a camera in their right hand. We all have cameras, and there's cameras everywhere in these buildings. What I like is the message to be sent to any idiot that acts like an idiot. Look at the other idiots. We found them all. All idiots have been caught.
Can you imagine going to a Broadway show, and after the show, the actors are coming out of stage door, and somebody throwing eggs at an actor or an actress? I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous.
Well, Richard, I appreciate the call. It's not even something that should have to be said. It doesn't even have to be said. Right? It's one of those talk show things where someone does something like this at a sporting event, and now people feel compelled to call a talk show and say, you shouldn't be allowed to throw things at athletes. Yeah. Yes, you should not be allowed to throw things at athletes. By the way, you're not allowed to throw things at athletes. You know, it's one of those conversations that it's so obvious and something we shouldn't even have to say that we almost sound stupid saying it because it's so simple. Yes, don't throw things at athletes. And I think fans sometimes think there's like that third wall. Right? Like that third wall in television where, you know, you're like looking at the camera and it kind of freaks somebody out at home. Like the, you know, I mean, obviously the, you know, shows like Modern Family and The Office, they changed all that. I think fans somehow think there's a third wall at sporting events. And maybe the Malice at the Palace showed you that there isn't. That if you were to walk past Russell Westbrook on Fifth Avenue and you had a box of popcorn, the last thing in the world you're going to do is throw it in his face. Because you know what? He'll probably turn around and pop you. And you would live in fear of that. Well, you know, maybe a couple of times an athlete at least even being having to be held back before they go in the crowd. And not that any athlete should ever go in the crowd after a fan. But I think fans think that it's never going to happen. And they don't have to fear that. But man, every one of these people, every one of them that gives all the rest of us a bad name, ban them for life out of the bill. You were never allowed to come again.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
The Yankees continue to have one of those Yankee kind of games. They are being shut out right now by the Rays 3-0 in the Bronx. And I think Rob in Lenox wants to talk about that. Rob, how you holding up?
Bob, how are you? It's been
it's
a long time since I talked to you. I used to talk to you down the dial. I really enjoy your jet calls and everything else. About the work you do. So, look, man, I can't take it anymore. And I hate to say this. It's not his fault, all right? It's not his fault, but Aaron Boone needs to go, okay? He needs to go. His team needs a kick in the ass. Any manager is going to kick them in the rear end. I've never seen such lethargy by a Yankee team my whole life. You know, Bob, I've been watching Yankee baseball since 1970. First of all, Stick is rolling over in his grave. Who the hell put the team at Yankee Stadium together with all right-handed hitters? I mean, we're a bunch of DHs that strike out, all right? I've had enough. I'm sorry. The Yankees have 12 stolen bases this season. God forbid anybody, Bob, could actually lay a bunt down and get the hell on base. God forbid Aaron Boone could ever let anybody steal a base. I mean, I'm sorry. what's the lethargy of this team, and I cannot deal with it anymore. I know it's only May and June. It's only June, beginning of June. I understand that. But this team needs a kick in the ass. They're just terrible to watch. They're boring as hell. Their situation rating is the worst I've ever seen in 50 years of Yankee teams. It's just ridiculous. I can't stand it. And analytics, you know what's interesting? I'm working on sort of a book, a novella, whatever you want to call it, about how analytics has ruined baseball. It's not only ruined baseball for me, Bob, it's ruined basketball for me. Because if I have to see 43-pointers, I mean, the idea of basketball is to get the ball close to the basket. The idea of basketball is to share the ball with other people on the court, not just dribble and dribble and dribble and take a shot. So I do give James Harden a lot of credit for that. But when I was a kid, I saw five Hall of Famers play together at the same time and win a championship for the last time the Knicks won a championship. Why the ego of today's athlete? Why the stupidity of analytics? It's amazing, Bob. When they thought they were going to actually have a game that was going to be winnable, they actually ruined the game of basketball and baseball through science and all the BS math that happened. So, yep. Anyway, I'll get your comments on it.
Well, hey, Rob, let me first of all, let me ask you, yes. Do you feel better? Like, does it feel good to just get that out?
Yeah, I feel really good.
Because I can feel it's bottled up, right? Yeah. Now, having said that, now you've got it all out. Let's take just a couple of points one by one. You talk about situational hitting. You talk about not stealing, laying down a bunt, all of that. A big-time, nonstop, right-handed lineup. Okay. None of that has anything to do with Aaron Boone. None of it.
I know that.
So you fire Aaron Boone. You are admitting, at least on the surface, we are scapegoating a guy for a team that we put together. That, I mean, I bet Aaron Boone wouldn't mind doing some of the things that you are talking about. As Andujar, by the way, goes opposite field, the Yankees are finally on the board. Maybe, Rob, maybe you got it going as Andujar just hit an opposite field home run. But, look, this team's going to hit. The Yankees will hit. All right, you don't have the Gleyber Torreses. The Aaron Judge is hitting, so I didn't want to throw him in there. He actually has been good. But Gleyber Torres, Giancarlo Stanton, Gio Urshela, LeMahieu, you don't have guys on your team like that and have them go, you know, 100 games without hitting. It's not going to happen. It almost shows you how ridiculous last season was that we've almost now played what last year was the equivalent of a full season, and it's just Memorial Day weekend, right? So there are a lot of times where you're wondering how a team's going to do after Memorial Day. The Yankees will hit. All right, you can't be this talented and not hit at some point. I'd be more worried that their pitching is not going to be able to keep up what it has been so far this season outside of Gerrit Cole. And now we already see Kluber hurt. You know, Taillon has been a bit of a roller coaster. Severino is supposed to now, I guess, begin a rehab assignment, and maybe he's not too far from coming back. But to me, the bigger argument is not whether or not they're going to find their hitting at some point this season and have stretches that are good enough where they hit, where I think they'll be a playoff team. I just think they're fundamentally flawed with how they're put together. That they are so right-handed, so based on power, so based on swinging for the fences, so antithetical to what they were at the end of the 90s when they were a dynasty. That's the part that I can't figure out. I mean, Brian Cashman was a part of that same front office that put together that team. That team not only didn't have guys that didn't hit 50 home runs, that team didn't have anybody that hit 40 home runs. I don't think the 1998 Yankees that won 114 games had one guy that even hit 30 home runs. Like, that team was based on, you can't shift against us. Try and shift. You want to shift against Paul O'Neill and Bernie Williams, who you can't because he's a switch hitter, and Derek Jeter, who constantly hit the ball the other way. That team put the ball in play, got on base, put pressure on the other team. And if they happen to hit a home run from time to time, great. They happen to hit a home run from time to time. Where has that kind of baseball gone? Why wouldn't the LeMahieus of the world, to me, represent the kind of player the Yankees went after in the late 90s, you know, and when they were building the dynasty? That's the kind of guy that it was built on. I mean, he's more the outlier now than, you know, this team is more built around the Luke Voits, Aaron Judges, Giancarlo Stantons, Gary Sanchez, right? Like the feast or famine, oftentimes home run hitter. And so at some point this season, these guys are going to hit. They're going to go through stretches of the year where they're going to score 6, 7, 8 runs a game for like a month. That will happen. But when they get back to the postseason again, assuming that's where they end up, and they take on a postseason team that has really, really good pitching, then what? We've seen that movie before. the swing for the fences, feast or famine, home run hitting lineup against a team with really good pitching, because that's who you play against in the playoffs, 4 years in a row now, been shut down. Their bats have gone quiet. And yet they keep bringing back the same kind of team the next year. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. By the way, that was the Pinstripe Report, brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Rays right now have a 3-1 lead, and Duhar went the other way. But the Yankees, unless they hit, it looks like another couple of home runs, because that's the only way they score, then they might go down for the sixth straight time, or sixth time in their last seven games, after being swept over the weekend by the Tigers. Oh, my God. I mean, you want to talk about looking like you're choking the life out of the bat, and every at-bat is going to be flailing at terrible pitches. Right now, they as a team are pressing. They just have terrible at-bats way too often. The Pinstripe Report, brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Truly Hard Seltzer, 100 calories. No, man, I can't read. I think I did 4 hours of radio this morning, and now it's catching up to me. Again, I'm going to try it again. The Pinstripe Report, brought to you by Truly Hard Seltzer. Try Truly Hard Seltzer. 100 calories, 1 gram sugar, 5% alcohol, 27 different flavors. Truly Hard Seltzer Beverage Company. Please drink responsibly. No matter how I may have sounded reading that spot, I have not had 5 Truly Hard Seltzers myself. Although it probably sounds like I have. Let's get back to the phones, talk to Joe in Stony Brook, who joins us next here on 98.7 ESPN. Hello, Joe.
Hey, Bob. Thanks for taking my call.
You got it.
I have a comment about the bottle throwing incident, and then a quick question to you about the KD and Harden trade. The comment about the bottle throwing. So I had an opinion about this before this happened yesterday, but then I saw Shaq on NBA on TNT, and this is what Shaq said. He says, this has been happening to him since his school days, high school days, yep. College days, yep. NBA, international. He said, move on. And this is that was my opinion. My opinion was, you're arresting the fan anyway. What else do we have to do? That's it. You're done. Why are we still talking about this?
Because you want to. I think you do want to make an example of people, so hopefully it puts the person that does this more in the spotlight, and I would hope would, you know, be influential in not having it happen again, like be a deterrent. Right? Thanks for the call, Joe. I mean, to me, like, you want this to stop. So if Shaq is saying that this happened to him his whole life, then isn't he kind of de facto saying no one has ever done anything to make it stop? Make it stop. Right? Whatever we were doing, which I guess was largely nothing back in the 80s and 90s, didn't solve the problem. Because we have an incident like every night in the NBA now where a fan is being hauled off because somebody gets something thrown at them or something racist is being said. And I have to tell you, I think today's athlete is different than the Shaq era, because I think these guys, they've got social media as a platform. They are much more, I think, feeling like they control the situation than they did back then. I think back then, athletes kind of looked at it as the cost of doing business. Right? Yeah, somebody threw a battery at me. That's the way it goes. No. This current era of athletes, I think, are feeling empowered to speak up and say, hey, don't throw things at me. Don't be racist. And by the way, what's wrong with them saying that? Who disagrees with that? Let's go to Rob in Hazlitt. Joins us next here on 98.7 ESPN. Hi, Rob.
Hey, how you doing? I kind of think I have a solution to this problem. I don't know if you ever seen the movie Public Enemy with Johnny Depp.
I have.
Back in the 40s and 50s, when they were looking for like high criminals during like movies, they would like before the movie played and they showed like the previews, they would say, "We're looking for so and so." They'd show his picture, show what they did, and they'd say, "Look to your right and look to your left. If you see this person, please contact somebody."
Right.
You know, hey, if you laugh at it, but
every little bit helps.
You know,
I'm with you.
We send a text to this number and yep. Give us your row and your.
Well, that happens now. Like thanks for the call. When we do the Jet games, we have a PSA that we read during the games where there is a number that you can text. You know, you text whatever to this number and your seat location and section, and that alerts security to a problem in your section. So that does exist. Somebody even brought up the possibility of facial recognition technology. And someone said, you know, how are you going to keep people out of these buildings? You know, facial recognition technology? Yes, that's on the way. I mean, I was talking to someone with the Jets, and we were having a conversation about what do you do post-pandemic to get vaccinated-only people in the stadium. And they're not there yet. All right, I mean, it's not something that's going to be employed yet, but they are tinkering with and companies are coming up with facial recognition technology to tie you to your ticket, to tie you to whether or not you've been vaccinated. So it's not something I think that's, you know, close to being deployed yet. But I do think there will come the day where you won't have a ticket on your phone. You won't have a hard ticket. And that even all might be gone. You might look your face into a scanner. And now we know who came to the game. We know if this is someone that shouldn't be coming into the game. And then you get the green light and you walk through and you're in the game. But facial recognition technology is not like some, you know, like far off thing in the future. Like we're all going to be, you know, flying around in flying cars or, you know, in like Star Trek, like beaming ourselves to different places. Oh, and they'll also have facial recognition technology. Can you believe it? No, this is something that they're talking about now. And having the ability at some point to employ, to get fans into the building, but also to keep fans out of the building that shouldn't be there. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Let's go to Joe in Queens, who joins us next here on Memorial Day on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Joe.
Hey, Rob. How you doing? First-time caller. Just a couple of tidbits about the Knicks here. I think people are like, kind of like over-exaggerating by everything going on because we're kind of like year one and a half of a rebuild. And the Hawks are like on year four since they drafted Trae Young, and Trae Young's obviously developing fantastically for them. But I do think the one thing we need to do, and because obviously all else has failed, is just take away Trae Young's ability as a facilitator and make him strictly a scorer, kind of like what Portland was doing with Jokic. That way when, you know, go on every screen. If he scores 50, 60 points, that's great. But he's more dangerous when he gets people involved. What do you think?
I agree. I mean, I do think that the timeline right now is probably a little different for the Knicks. But it's not even so much about a rebuild. You know, I think there's, you know, we get the idea that we're going to build through the draft. And yes, that definitely is part of what you're doing. But that's a smaller slice of the pie chart than it ever was in the NBA we grew up watching. Now it's about you want to be the Nets, right? You want to show the next round of superstars, look who we are, right? Look at the foundation. There's a culture here. This is where you want to be to sign your next big buddy deal with one of your pals. And to me, that more than anything this year, you've started to hear that in the DNA of what some of these guys are saying, right? Like, go back and find that Zion quote from back in whatever, January, February, when he stirred the pot. When he came to the Garden and somebody said, what'd you think about being to the Garden? He's like, hey, I'm glad you asked that question because this place is the best. And when I was here with Duke, I always wanted to play at the Garden. And obviously, other than New Orleans, this would be the number one place that somebody would want to go play. Right? You could see it in his eyes that the experience of playing, even in an empty Garden, was different. So playing in that building in front of that crowd, and I tweeted this during game one, that hearing the Garden sound like the Garden again was awesome. Because there are very, very few buildings. I've been to a lot of them. All right, college, pro, NBA, NHL, NFL. I've been all around the country. There are some buildings, and the Garden is at the top of the list, where if you close your eyes when there's a Garden game on and you listen, you can hear it. It just sounds different. And it sounded like, again, what it used to sound like in games one and two. And it's going to sound like that on Wednesday night as well. You know it will. And to me, that's the thing that if I'm, you know, a Damian Lillard or a Kawhi or anybody in the NBA that might be thinking again about a change of scenery. The Knicks, I think, this year have accomplished that. I think that vibe is back in the NBA for the first time in 20 years. Instead of striking out on free agents, maybe the Knicks get a few.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast.
Well, that's awesome.
Looking for more access to the show?
That's right, man.
Check us out on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at TMKS ESPN.
This was the worst weather I've ever in my 50 years on this earth experienced on Memorial Day weekend. This was the worst Memorial Day weekend ever. weather-wise. You know, having said that, you know, it probably bears mentioning as well. I always feel weird when people call up and, you know, we're doing one of these shows or even just seeing people, you know, around and saying happy Memorial Day. You know, happy 4th of July, Merry Christmas, Happy New Year, all of the other holidays, Happy Thanksgiving. Like, those are all holidays that are based, I think, on the joy of a celebration. But this really is a day where this afternoon, if you're having a beer, you're watching the Yankees, listening to our show here, you're at the pool, you're wherever you are, just take a minute to think for a second about what Memorial Day is about. You know, this is a holiday that means something very, very, very different to the people that it's actually about and the families that it's actually about. Because this is a day that we are memorializing people that gave their life for this country. So while we're enjoying kind of the kickoff to summer, you know, you're having a barbecue and everything, just always remember that the reason we have today off from work, the reason you're having a barbecue, hanging out with family, kicking off the summer, is it's supposed to be a day about honoring those who made the ultimate sacrifice. And there are people out there that this is a day about tears. This is a day about remembering a loved one that gave their life for the country. This is a day about remembering someone who died way, way, way too young. You know, all of those headstones in Arlington National Cemetery or any other military cemetery anywhere, you know, anywhere in the world, most, the vast majority of those headstones are people who were in their teens or 20s or 30s that gave up two-thirds to more than half their life for our country. And so I always just feel a little weird when I say happy Memorial Day. For a lot of people, it's not happy, nor should it be. It's solemn. And it really is to remember and give thanks to those that have made the ultimate sacrifice so that we have the right to enjoy a baseball game and a barbecue and a day at the pool. 888-ESPN is not the telephone number. Man, oh, man. There should be like a tip jar, right? Like a fine jar. Every time I screw that up, like $5 got to go in the jar. 800-919-3776. 800-919-ESPN is the telephone number here on 98.7 ESPN. Bob Wischusen with you to the top of the hour. Dan Grasso takes over. Then let's get back to the phones and let's talk to AJ in Port Jeff. Joins us next here on 98.7 ESPN.
Bob,
what's
doing?
Up? Good, AJ.
I couldn't agree more with what you just said, well said, the previous monologue. So on the sporting event tonight,
yep.
I'm a big hockey fan, big Islander fan.
Oh, so am I, yes. Big game tonight. Very big game tonight.
And I just want to say, I think all Islander fans, you know, we know about the system and Trotz and Sorokin starting or Varlamov, but to me they're two key players that not only this game, but the series depends on, and it is Barzal and Eberle. Both of them have to play a north-south game. I know they don't have Anders Lee on the first line. They got Leo Komarov, and
yep.
You know, they've been playing more like a third line, but the reality is big-time players step up on big stages, and Barzal, you got to play north-south like McKinnon did yesterday, like Rantanen did yesterday. Same with Eberle. There's no more of this soft going around the curves. You can't score that way against this team. And I hope that they show up, because if they don't, it'll be a short series.
I think Barzal's got 3 points in the playoffs so far. Is that right?
And mainly he's looked invisible. I
agree. I mean, I've watched them. Look, I was born and raised a Ranger fan, so nothing makes me happier if the Islanders lose. But at the same time, they're a fun team to watch. And he is he has the ability, when he is playing at his most aggressive and his most attacking style, Barzal has the ability to look just different. He can look like the best player on the ice. And he's so much fun to watch when he's got his A game. And I think you're right. I think he needs to. I mean, look, there are some guys that their value to their team, and AJ, thanks for the call, their value to their team doesn't necessarily show up in statistics. Right, like the fourth line, the Matt Martin line, obviously you've got guys that are out there that impact the game in a way that doesn't necessarily show up in the scoring column. Some guys, they have to show up in the scoring column, or they're not doing their job. And if Matt Barzal ends a playoff series with 2 points in a 6 or 7 game series, then you have a tough time winning, because that means he's not producing. because that is a guy that statistically I can put a number on whether or not he is impacting the game the way he needs to impact the game. So I agree with you. I mean, he needs to be the best player for the Islanders. And if he brings his full level of skill to the game, then he can impact. He can win a game by himself. He's got that kind of talent, and they need that. Let's get to Jim in Manhattan. Joins us next here on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Jimmy.
Hello, Bob. How you doing?
Sure. I'm doing great. How are you?
Pretty good, pretty good. You know, Bob, the Jets of the 80s had the great sack exchange. Klecko and Gastineau, 15 to 20 sacks each per year.
Both don't forget Marty Lyons. Day.
Yeah, but he didn't get the sacks. He was
yeah,
very good.
I just feel like I'm supposed to say his name.
Yeah, he's your buddy, I know. Buttle, Darryl Ray, Eric McNaughton on defense, and they had Altoon, Wesley Walker, Shuler, Freeman McNeil.
Yep, they had good players.
And O'Brien. I think they had better personnel than Miami, Denver, or the New England AFC teams that went to the Super Bowl in the 80s. So why do you think the SAG exchange bet Jets didn't do better and get to a Super Bowl and win a couple of Super Bowls?
Well, they were good. They weren't great. I mean, they weren't like a dominant team in terms of personnel. And to me, they were missing a little something at quarterback. Kenny O'Brien was good. Wasn't great. Richard Todd was not even as good as Kenny O'Brien. You're drafting Kenny O'Brien because Richard Todd wasn't that good. Now, the 83 team, they played in the Mud Bowl. I mean, they got completely taken out of that game because they played in a mud pit. That team probably could have, you know, been a Super Bowl winner. And I think they felt like they got robbed a little bit of being able to play their style. The 86 team started off 10-1 and then went to 10-6, then had the roughing the, you know, passer penalty on Gastineau against Cleveland. That team also was a really good team, but they were never great. I mean, they were never the clear-cut, like the Patriots have been all these years, the clear-cut favorite. They were a good team. But they never also in, you know, all your life as a Jet fan since they lost Joe Namath had the great quarterback. They didn't have Dan Marino. They could have had Dan Marino. If Dan Marino was the quarterback of those teams in the 80s with the sack exchange, with all of those other pieces, then yeah, I think they probably would have won a Super Bowl or two. Didn't happen. 83 draft, they blew it. What do you want me to tell you? Let's go to Dave in Queens, who joins us next here on 98.7 ESPN. Hey, Dave.
Bob, thanks. I always say have a great Memorial Day weekend. You know, have a, you know.
That's probably a good way to put it.
Yeah. Thanks, Bob. You're the man. Willie Randolph and Julius Randle have number 30. They both should be tied by the Knicks. One should be by the Knicks for Bernard, the Yankees for Willie. But every time I see Julius, I think of that. But let me ask you this. Would you classify a meltdown at the end of the game yesterday with Gallinari, like him doing that with Gallinari and then going to the sideline standing?
A meltdown?
I thought he had a little meltdown there.
No,
yeah.
That's him. That's standing up for your teammate. That's a message.
What did Gallinari do? What is
Gallinari got into doing? It with Bullock.
Yes. Okay,
and so that's why he gave.
Up.
Yeah,
he looked a little frantic to me.
No, he gave Reggie. Okay. He gave that was the you go after Reggie Bullock. Here's my forearm shiver to you. I mean, did you see the reaction that Randall got when he went to the bench? Reggie Bullock was the first guy that got up and went over and gave him a high five, and two or three other teammates came over and gave him a high five too.
I was in the bar.
Yeah, if you go back, you'll.
Okay.
Yep, Dave. Thanks for the call. Yeah, that was what that was. That was I am standing up for my teammate. 800-919-3776. Let's get to Ken in Manhattan, who joins us next here on 98.7 ESPN. Hi, Ken.
Hi, Bob. I have a point about the Knicks losing. I think they were out-coached. I think Nate McMillan did a much better job, and the Knicks needed to slow down their pace. They were rushing and rushing their shots. And on defense, they didn't pull back and play a zone or a man-to-man that was further back to stop Trey.
Yeah, I think a couple of things. Well, I think what you're bringing up first is interesting. They got out-coached because they played too fast. I think what Tom Thibodeau is thinking in terms of getting Julius Randle started, but getting these guys better looks overall, is they're not quite playing fast enough. Like, get into your offense, get right to your first option, get a good shot up. You know, I think he thinks that they could be playing at a quicker pace offensively. and getting Julius Randle to a spot where he's getting a better look before the double team can come, before a defense can be set where they're sending 2 to 2.5 guys at him, the way Seth Greenberg said this morning. So, you know, you can always second guess how you guard Trae Young at this point. At some point, though, a coach has to be able to say to his players, here's the game plan, go execute it. Right? Like, he has run 4 or 5 different guys at Trae Young. Nobody can stay in front of him. He gets to wherever he wants to get to, wherever he gets there. Or, you know, whenever. And when he gets there, can do pretty much whatever he wants. Is that coaching? Or is that, this is my personnel, and I'm going to put them in the best spot I can possibly put them in to try and go make a play and execute a game plan, and they're just not capable of staying in front of this guy. So, you know, yes, you can always second guess the coaching, and maybe in game 5, he'll take a different tact. And maybe he'll pack it in, and he'll tell Trae Young, you know, through their actions, Trae, you could take 25 footers if you want, and we're going to live and die on whether or not you make a bunch of them, but we're not going to let you get in the paint. We are going to pack the paint, and you are not getting in the middle. I think even there have even been times where they've tried that. It hasn't worked. But watch Trae Young come down and knock down 4 or 5 threes, and, you know, the Garden will all of a sudden start to panic on Wednesday night because they're packing it in, living with whether or not Trae Young can make those threes, and then he just goes out there and makes them. 800-919-3776, 800-919-ESPN. Bob Wischusen in for the guys. Dan Grasso at the top of the hour. Take a quick break. If you're on hold, stay right there. We will definitely get back to more of your telephone calls. But while I have a chance, let's take a look at this day in Yankee history, brought to you by Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi. This date, Yankee history, 1938. Lou Gehrig played in his 2,000th consecutive game. Had an RBI single in the Yankees' 12-5 victory over Boston in the Bronx. The 34-year-old first baseman will play another 130 straight games before ALS will shorten his Hall of Fame career and ultimately cost him his life. That is this day in Yankee history, brought to you by Woodbridge, a proud sponsor of the New York Yankees. Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi, making classic wine for over 40 years.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.